Ah, the cost of living crisis. Well, it doesn't show any sign of abating, despite the changing or likelihood of a change in prime minister and so on. We're all suffering. Pressure is basically being provided for all sorts of households, and inflation, of course, has risen by over 9%, and so on and so forth. It's no surprise then that 34% of British people surveyed actually say that not being able to pay basic living costs such as rent, energy bills, and food is their biggest financial concern. So, to actually talk us through these concerns over financial health, we're delighted to welcome financial well-being expert. That's the wonderful Jonathan Watts-Leigh. How are you, Jonathan?
Hi, Alex. Yeah, good. Thank you.
Excellent. So again, many of these findings seem to be fairly self-evident, but at the same time, how do we actually deal with those particular aspects? What are the sort of ways in which we can keep a budget? Is it all down to education? Have we got a generation of folk who literally are bemused when it comes to the numbers?
Yeah, I think the research that we've done at Wealth at Work shows that whilst about a quarter of people are facing financial health problems, one in seven actually say that they're embarrassed about their financial worries. And actually, if you look at the younger age range, so 18 to 34 year olds, it's about one in four that say that they're embarrassed about their financial worries. So I guess one of the key issues arising out of that is, if they're embarrassed, then are they going to actually get help and do the things they should be doing? And there are a lot of things that people should be looking at. I mean, the first thing is probably to look at your monthly budget and actually understand where your money's going, what you're spending money on. And we certainly have found that a lot of times people spend money on things that they're not even using. So a classic example of that are things like subscriptions to TV services and music services, newspapers, that type of thing. So people should be looking at those and saying, well, am I using them? If not, can't cancel them. Also, things like what I would term bigger ticket items. So if you think about things like your broadband bill, your phone bill, insurances, so things like car insurance or household insurance, such as contents insurance or buildings insurance, all these things cost a lot of money. And yet people do not spend the time actually reviewing whether they've got the best deal or not. And yet, if you look at those collectively, a lot of people could actually save hundreds of pounds over a year.
Yes, there used to be a notion of a group of people who were time poor, cash rich, but maybe in the current situation, it's time poor, cash poor. Perhaps you do actually need to look and evaluate those kind of areas. Now, there are 10 areas that you put together in terms of how those of us fortunate enough to be employed may actually sort of find a ways of approaching this cost of living crisis. One of the most intriguing ones, I thought, was increasing the frequency of salary payments.
Yeah, so this is something that has really taken off in the last few months, and this is the whole notion of people taking their salary once it's earned and not when traditionally you get the paycheck. So, for example, a lot of people will get the paycheck at the end of the month, but that will relate to work they've done much earlier in the month. So the argument is why can people not have their money earlier? And so there's a lot of organizations out there now that are paying that salary earlier. Now that's good, I think, for one-off costs. So if the car breaks down and you need to fix it in order to get to work, then you may want to take that salary advance in order to get that car fixed so you can go to work. The only thing I would warn against, though, is that these things do have costs attached to them. So what you don't want to do is get into a cycle where you're constantly taking salary advances, and that becomes the norm in order to pay your bills every month. So good for a one-off, but not so good ongoing.
Yeah, absolutely. You've also got, presumably from the same department, things like salary sacrifices to pay for company cars, bikes, bus passes, and so on. Savings, of course, very much to the fore, and it's never too soon to start putting in a pension plan.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think where people have got spare cash, and maybe they can create spare cash because they look at their budget, and despite the cost of living crisis, they say, well, actually, if I do shop around for things like my insurances, maybe if I shop a bit more wisely, so do I really need to buy the more expensive branded items, or can I go for more own brands? Then actually, if they can create some extra money, then pension is always worth something worth considering, because you pay money into your pension, you will get tax relief on it, It is also quite probable that your employer may match that contribution as well. So if you like, you can more than double your money that you're paying into your pension in terms of that contribution. So yes, for those that can afford to do that, a good thing usually to do.
There have been many comments made and much discussions had about hybrid working and how it can be seen as a big asset in terms of improving morale for workforces and indeed actually cutting down on commuting costs. Having said that, there's also the generation who say, no, you've got to actually make the sacrifice. You've got to get into work. You can't be work shy and work from home. That's ridiculous. Is there going to be a solution to that, or is it going to be a case of very much left up to negotiations between the employer and the employee?
Well, I think there's clearly a lot more examples now of hybrid working. I think one of the interesting things from a financial perspective is how that works out for people. So clearly, if you've got a long commute, you're driving or you're taking the train, if you don't need to do that anymore, then on balance, you're probably saving money. And so some people may look at it from a financial perspective and go, oh, this is a good way that I could save a lot of money each month by working from home. However, there is another consideration, particularly as we start heading into winter, in that some people say, yeah, but hold on a minute. If I've got to stay at home every day and I've got to have the heating on, then as we know, the energy bills are going up. That's going to cost me a fortune. So actually, I'd rather go into my place of work where effectively they're paying for the heating and I'm not paying for the heating. So I think from a financial perspective, it's almost a bit of a personal one, really, as to what would work better for you. And of course, as you say, Alex, you have got then the overlay of being in the workplace. And even if you park all the financial issues, actually, is it better to be in the workplace at least some of the time, meeting colleagues and perhaps progressing a career in a more traditional way?
Do we still have this stigma when it comes in Britain to discussing our finances? I mean, it was often regarded as it's a little bit vulgar when we start talking about our finances and how well off or not so well off we happen to be.
Yeah, I think we do. And I think the research we've done shows that, you know, this whole notion of one in seven people being embarrassed about their money worries, lends itself to that old way of thinking. However, I would argue people, you know, should not be burying their head in the sand. If they've got concerns, then they need to go and get help. And there are, you know, there's a lot of places where they can get help. I mean, turning to their employer often can be very helpful. A lot of employers now have financial well-being programs in place. So they offer things like discounted loans. Often they offer discounts on retail services as well. So 5% off your weekly shop, for example. So people may find that particularly helpful. Also, they have things like employee assistance programs, where again, you can phone up effectively a helpline and you will have an expert who will talk through your finances and maybe point you in the right direction in terms of some of the things that you should think about. But even if you don't have an employer that offer those sorts of services, people should be looking around. You know, if you've got a lot of credit card debt, for example, then actually go and look at some of the comparison sites, see if you can consolidate that debt, see if you can get it at a much cheaper rate, which again could save you a lot of money on a monthly basis. So I think the key thing is don't bury your head in the sand. You might be embarrassed about it, but actually just spend some time looking at your budget and looking at ways you can ease some of the financial pain.
It's all about the information. And if people wish to find out further information about Wealth at Work in this particular survey, Jonathan, where would you point them?
Yeah, so they can visit wealthatwork.co.uk, where they will find information. And, you know, particularly for any employers that are listening that want to help their staff, again, they should go and have a look at that site.
Jonathan Watsley, financial expert and director at Wealth at Work. Huge thanks and keep on keeping on.
Thanks, Alex. Cheers.